Stream ESPN 1000 anytime through the ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
KD's going to join us here in a minute to talk Bears, our very own Jeff Dickerson. It's getting hot in here. It's Carmen and Yurko. Beautiful day today. It's warming up. Try to get outside, get some fresh air. Socially distance, of course. Follow the rules. But you can go outside, take the kids on a bike ride or something. This is from Bill Barnwell's column. He broke it down into different groups. Very detailed column about NFL free agency a few weeks in now, Yurko, a couple weeks in. And he wrote that the confused teams made confusing decisions portion of his article here, and the Bears are one of those confused teams, I guess, and that doesn't give us much reassurance, does it? He writes, the Bears proceeded to blow away non-existent markets to get the guys they wanted. After GM Ryan Pace struck out on tight ends Adam Shaheen, Deion Sims, and Trey Burton, Chicago signed Jimmy Graham to a two-year $16.1 million deal with $9 million guaranteed and what must be the most inessential no-trade clause in NFL history. Chicago also chose to send a fourth-round pick to acquire Nick Foles from the Jaguars, eating some portion of what was an underwater contract in the process, when the likes of Cam Newton and Andy Dalton are either available for free or will be available for much cheaper. Now, we've given you our thoughts on why Nick Foles does probably make the most sense for the Bears. There's great familiarity, and if there was any debate or discussion going on in the room, some guys supporting Nick, maybe some guys saying, no, Cam's the guy or Andy Dalton. I think it all went straight in the garbage when we realized just how serious this pandemic was going to be and how it was going to affect our day-to-day lives, including these people that work for the franchises when they knew there's not going to be an offseason, let's face it. There's going to be no OTAs. I don't think they wanted to teach a new offense to somebody. So if there was anybody else that piqued their interest, I think Nick Foles definitely made the most sense to them when they realized what this spring and summer was going to look like. So let's bring in Jeff Dickerson. He is at Dickerson ESPN on Twitter, and he joins Carmen and Yurko now on ESPN 1000. You think there was much argument and debate about which quarterback it was? Was it always Foles, or did it really become Foles when they realized what a difficult offseason it was going to be for all these teams, JD?
I mean, Carm, I think that has to help, and you laid it out perfectly. You know, you're not going to have the chance to spend an entire offseason program installing new stuff for a new quarterback that hasn't done it before. I think that's one of the reasons that Nick Foles was so attractive to Matt Nagy as far as bringing him in here, is that no matter what Nagy draws up with the coaches, and there will be differences in the offense this season, we know that. As a veteran, he's going to be able to handle that pretty quickly. I wouldn't say the Bears are confused. Guys, I would say the Graham signing was a confusing contract.
Yeah,
I don't think that's going to work out quite well. But I mean, you understand it was an area of need. It's a drastic area of need. So what they addressed in free agency, they had to get the quarterback in here. They got it. Now, is it going to work out the way that they hope? Who knows? But they had to get a quarterback. They had to get a tight end, albeit probably not the one that a lot of people were hoping they were going to get. And then the other big contract was Robert Quinn, who they had to get a pass rusher. And I wrote about the defense today on ESPN.com. And here's the number, guys, that really kind of got me going. You know, as far as, look, there's going to be risk in Robert Quinn. He turns 30 in May. And as you guys both know, whenever there's an older player that has a big year after a couple of sort of so-so seasons, to get himself back in free agency and cash in, there's always risk that that could have been his last great year and the following years are not going to be as productive and the Bears might have overpaid at $30 million guaranteed. I mean, this year is guaranteed for him. Next year is guaranteed for him. It's a big commitment. But, I mean, we have this great resource at ESPN called our Stats and Info People, as you guys know. And Robert Quinn was the number one guy in the league winning his pass rushes.
Yeah.
His pass rush win rate was number one. The guy they got rid of, Leonard Floyd, was 57. So Floyd's younger, and I'm not saying he's not athletic. I'm not saying he can't play at all. He's an okay player. But if you just want to look at purely from an analytical standpoint, the numbers last year and that production, where the Bears are now with Quinn versus where they were with Floyd, that is a major upgrade on paper. So getting that pass rusher, again, I think was part of his plan. So I wouldn't say the plan was confusing, but the Graham signing certainly was the one that leaves people guessing.
Well, the money, I guess, is really the problem. If you bring him on board and you're only going to pay him $4 million, I think people are okay. There's Jimmy Graham. Maybe he's a red zone target for whatever quarterback you have. If he goes out there and catches 8 to 10 touchdown passes, okay, we're going to take that. But the fact that you paid him that much money, you gave him a no-trade clause, but you didn't guarantee his contract, which is the funniest part. Okay, we're not going to trade you, but your second year we're going to cut you and say goodbye. Have a good life. You know, that to me is the funniest thing of the whole thing then.
And the problem, Yurko, is, you know, like when you're going to give out this type of money, which isn't like blockbuster money, but it's some pretty good money, it basically takes away other areas and other ways you can address the position. So they've got so much money tied up right now in Graham and Trey Burton. They signed Demetrius Harris in the offseason. That's a Matt Nagy guy, but he's way more of a Y. He's not a U, really. It hasn't been his role in the NFL. You know, they could draft a tight end, but, you know, guys, I look at those rankings. We get them sent to us every single day for ESPN.com. There's not a great tight end draft. So you can understand why they had to go out and get a veteran. It's just paying that for this veteran, like Yurko said. I mean, it's the commitment and the fact that by committing that, you have basically put yourself in a position where you have to depend on him to produce for you. I think that's the sketchy part that, again, it's kind of hard to envision it going the way the Bears hope it's going to go.
Ian Rappaport had the breakdown of the Nick Foles contract. About what you expected, if you got to look at that, JD. Does it tell us anything about their hopes or plans for him, or should we just know what they are, considering the coaches went out and traded for him and this is the guy they want?
Oh, no, we had the contract weeks ago.
Oh,
no,
okay. Okay.
This is it. I mean, listen, his base salary for this year is fully guaranteed. And as the three of us talked about before, his roster bonus for next year has already been fully guaranteed. So that's where that $21 million.
So that's the $21 million, right?
Yeah, that's where it is. It's this year's base salary, you get a little workout bonus money in there. But whoever did that deal, his agent, it's a great deal because, and this was the same deal, the same thing that Trey Burton had in his deal. His roster bonus for 2020 guys became guaranteed the third day of the league year in 2019. So they're like proactively putting these roster bonuses in there.
Is that common, JD?
I'm sorry, Carm?
Is that common? I mean, around the league?
I mean, you're seeing it a little more. It's a great piece of leverage. It's a great negotiating tactic. Because think about it. If Trey Burton had been healthy, when you're injured, it complicates everything. But if he had been healthy, they could have easily said, no way, you know, we're not going to pay this bonus to him and we're going to move on and take our losses. But it's already been fully guaranteed a year in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, very good to have those. I mean, if you're a player, that's a wonderful thing to have in your contract. I would say you can get that, go get it. But the money is $21 million in guarantees is where we're at.
And it could be for just 1 year, right, JD?
It could be just 1 year.
Yeah.
Now, again, like if he were to void out that contract, I don't know when that money is payable as far as the roster bonus, okay, that was guaranteed last year, like when the payment is due. Like they could do some deferment with that. I'm saying I know for sure exactly how that's going to work. But that's the money that he will no doubt, if everything goes haywire, he will collect that money, no doubt. So he has a very good opportunity to play here. And I thought, you know, you guys have talked about it, and I went back, and, you know, Lewis Riddick really, you know, understands the dynamic here because he's so close with Nagy. And, I mean, he's convinced it's going to be Foles here sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And if you just look at the money and look at the connections and look at the trust, and this is a question that we were asked for NFL Nation is, you know, like, who's going to really be hurt the most by all this that's going on right now in the world as far as not having the offseason program? And to me, the answer is simple. It is Trubisky. He's got to earn, if he wants to keep that job, he's got to earn the trust back of this organization. Maybe not the GM, but I mean the coaches and the people installing the offense and everything. He's got to earn that trust back. And how do you do that with everything going on right now? And then you got Foles, who already has the relationships, knows what's going on. to me, I think this is going to be happening here. It's just a matter of when, and I think that not having a normal off season does not help Trubisky's cause whatsoever.
All right, JD, anything else we should know?
You know, hopefully, I hope, if you've noticed, guys, there have been teams around the NFL that this week have begun to have, you know, their coaches available, the general managers available, because this was the time that people were supposed to be talking at the owners' meetings, which was canceled. So we hope in the near future that we could possibly hear from Ryan Pace or Matt Nagy before the draft, maybe Nick Foles, maybe a Robert Quinn. Nothing is concrete yet, but that's what we're hoping for. So hopefully, guys, maybe even as early as next week, we could have some more reaction for you guys from these key individuals and get a little more clarity on the Bears' free agent plan they executed.
That'll be great. Thanks, JD.
Fun.
Thank you, guys.
We'll talk to you soon, buddy. Could have something next week then. Before you know it, it will be time for the draft. When we come back, we're going to take more of your phone calls, 312-332-3776 for Carmen and Yurko.
This is Carmen and Yurko. Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Hope everyone's having a great Thursday. Tomorrow we'll be wrapping the week. We got a loaded show tomorrow, Yurk. Mark Pryor is going to join us. He is now the pitching coach of the Dodgers, you know.
I know that now.
Talk to him. Yeah, just got promoted. We'll talk to Mark Pryor tomorrow. We'll talk to Mike North tomorrow. You know, Caesars released odds for the college football season, assuming there is one. We're all hopeful that there is one. We have college football odds to win the conferences, so we can talk about that a little bit. Maybe today and tomorrow, Mike will join us. What else we got tomorrow, Merck? I'm missing somebody big, too.
Kyle Brandt.
Oh, yeah, we got our buddy Kyle Brandt tomorrow at 12:30.
Oh, wonderful.
He's going to join us. Talk about how he's doing with all this, about what the football season might look like. Jeff Passan was on with Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. I'll play that for everybody in just a little bit here. Just a little, about two-minute chunk of what Passan was saying about when MLB might return. Let's go back out to the calls for now, and let's say I, too. Let me see here. How about Chris in Barrington? Hey, Chris.
Hey, guys. You know, sitting here at home, my specific question when I called in was more about the NFL and the Bears, but, you know, in sports in general, is there a contingency plan if the Major League Baseball season doesn't happen, or, God forbid, we go and do next NFL season and they decide to cancel the season? I mean, these teams are dependent on revenue streams from either the ticket sales,
TV,
the ad content, the TV. I mean, if those TVs, you know, how are these contracts structured? They stood to the Cubs, like for Cubs. We heard all season long about how they didn't have money because they spent so much money in capital improvements in the off season to spend on players. So if there's not a revenue stream in those hotels, the bars, and everything they take a piece of, could we conceivably see next year that affect payrolls of teams going into another Major League Baseball season or NFL season? Can contracts be voided? You know, how is this? I have a real bad feeling this is going to shake out in a real negative way.
Chris, interesting points. Thanks for calling. I mean, a lot of MLB teams and just teams in general, I guess, are very leveraged, too. I mean, it's a fair enough point to talk about that. Look, they won't have to pay the players this year if there's no season.
Right. There's no salaries being handed
out. You're not
out.
Right. I mean, and that's,
if your season doesn't start, nothing starts.
You know, you're talking of upwards of $150 million, probably roughly average. Yeah, that's probably too high. I don't know. What do you think average payroll is? You're somewhere around $100 million maybe in MLB?
No, I think it's a little bit higher than
maybe,
that.
Maybe 110.
About 128,
okay.
Maybe 127, 135.
Yeah, that's probably about
I'd
right.
Say that area, you'd find a lot of teams down there.
Yeah.
And for those teams that are spending $60 million, you've got the teams that are spending $200 million
right,
out there.
Yeah.
You might even be right at $150 million. I think that's even a better number.
So let's say about $150 million that obviously you're not spending this year. But yeah, they are dependent on their cash flow is dependent on the revenue from TV and from the gate and what happens in those stadiums when fans are in there.
Well, listen, there's no television revenue. There's nothing from the online stuff that they have. There's nothing from BAM. There's zero revenue coming in, period. And the value they have is the value on the franchise. Yeah, they could borrow money against the value to stay liquid and to move forward, they can do that. But, yeah, if there's no cash being generated, it's still a dilemma for the teams.
Yes. Let's go to Dean downtown on ESPN 1000. Hey, Dean.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Tell us,
I'll tell you this. First of all, shout out to Cap and the Lori Rizzo Foundation for doing all that work. The Jay Cutler thing, I have to tell you, like, I've always been, you know, I remember when you guys were mentioning it and it broke live. You know, I was at East Bank Club. I was playing ball, and I'm, you know, unbiased, not a huge, you know, I root for the Bears because I'm in a public business, but they're not necessarily like something I follow my whole life. But I know Jay Cutler, don't you guys think that he kind of got a raw deal because he didn't, you know, he has the arm strength. He's got a rocket arm. You can't teach that. So
what did he get a raw deal? You get a raw deal. You mean coming to Chicago?
Well, no, not that.
Oh.
He got a raw deal because he got so many offensive coordinators and not a lot of help. And
That's what I mean. The franchise. I don't mean the city. I mean the franchise. Yeah, I see what Dean's saying. That they find ways to screw it up somehow. I've got to put the majority of the blame on the player here. I'm sorry. A lot of bodies left in the wake. I mean, I think it's too easy just to say it was everybody else's fault. A lot of the issues were Jay's doing. Let's face it. That's what I believe.
Listen, I like Jay Cutler as a quarterback. Did he take too many chances? Yeah. Was he too brash? Did he think he could make every single throw? Yes, he did. And did he, you know, when you sit there and you challenge D'Angelo Hall and you throw one or two interceptions his direction, listen, common sense at some point dictates to you, you might want to go a different direction, but he didn't care.
He couldn't do that, right.
He had a short memory. Yeah. He had no conscience. He didn't care. He was going to go out and get that. That quarterback compared to the quarterback we have now in Mitch Trubisky, I'd have Jay Cutler 1,000 times over.
I would, too. I would take Jay over him, sure. I mean, I think most sensible Bears fans would. I mean, at least you felt, I mean, whatever you think, he's still their best quarterback that they've had in most of our lifetime. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you still felt like you were somewhat capable. I don't know that, I mean, how can Bears fans feel that way right now with the way the offense performed last year? I mean, you still felt capable in a lot of weeks with Jay, didn't you?
Sure you did. Of course, yeah. You know, with Jay behind the quarterback, at least you thought you had yourself an offense that could go. You had an offense that was efficient, proficient, if you will. You had an offense that you go out there and you had confidence in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. The only knocks on Jay usually were his personality.
His personality. That was the biggest knock.
And his sourpuss attitude.
His decision-making and his personality, right?
Yeah.
Eric's in South Bend. What's up, Eric?
Hey, how's it going, dude? Yeah. Just want to talk about that color trade, man. I was hanging out at the lodge. It was either a division or Rush. Hanging out with some buddies. My dad texted me, Cutler to the Bears. Rush told me finished off another bottle of Hennessy. It was one of the best times of our life. Usually just growing up hearing about how crappy Jack Concannon was and all them other guys. So just wanted to get my thoughts, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, I think a lot of people felt that way. Thanks. I know Cap never did. He never liked him. Cap's on record saying that there's tape of him not liking the trade.
Now they're related.
And now they're related, yes. Never liked him. Has he produced the actual tape? I know he says the tape exists. Has he produced the tape? I would love to hear the tape of Cap saying he never was on board with the Jay Cutler trade. But I think most people were genuinely excited because there was promise and hope there. You were talking about a young quarterback with a big arm and a lot of skill, a lot of athleticism, coming off a Pro Bowl year. Let's say hi to Randy in Calumet City on ESPN 1000. Hey, Randy.
How you doing? Long-time listener, long life Sox fan.
All right.
They rest in peace, Ed Farmer.
Absolutely.
I got a story, but the only time I met Ed Farmer was like just after 9/11, you know, and I went to the Sox game with my dad, and it was hot out. And I had my jean cutoff shorts on, frayed at the end, and I had a degotee on, my hat turned on backwards, and it was hot. I looked like a hippie, whatever. So then we were at the game, and after the game, I'm like, oh, man, I forgot to get some elf ears for my kids. So I said, come on, Dad, I got to go back in there. So the only way to go back in there was through the main office where the employees go in. So I went to the elevator there where the executives go. My dad sat down. I says, I'll be back. He goes, okay. So I push the button. Door opens. Old guy in there, man in the elevator. I get in the elevator. He don't say nothing to me. I don't say nothing to him. I'm going up. And it's like, the door's open. And it's like kind of like dark, but it's daylight out, so I can see sun through the windows. I look at where am I at? I turn around. The elevator closes. I'm looking around. I'm in Reinsdorf's suite. It's his penthouse or whatever up there.
How did you get in past the executive office without anybody stopping you?
Well, right when you walk in there, you get the elevators right there.
Well, on the right, yeah, but I mean, nobody, there was no security. Normally, they don't let
nothing.
You.
Nothing.
I see what you're saying, I guess. You can walk to the front desk at the administrative office. I know where you're talking about. So the desk is straight in front of you. So you just peeled off right and went on
right.
The elevator?
And it's so surreal. It's like,
Randy, I mean,
this happened like I was floating. I'm like, I don't know what, you know, it's something that you would never think happened, but I'm the Lord's name. I swear to God, that's what happened.
So you end up in Reinsdorf, Sweden. Then what happened? Where was Fabio in there?
So I'm in there and I'm like looking around. I see, you know, the trophies and stuff like that. And I see his desk and there's a bar in there. And I'm like, oh, I got to call my wife at the time. So I'm trying to get out on the phone and I can't. So I dialed one first and then I got out and I'm talking to my wife. I'm like, you know, guess where I'm at? She's like, Sox game? I'm like, no, I'm in Reinsdorf's office, this and that. And I'm like screaming, like, well, see, nobody's in here. I'm just by myself. She's like, get out of there. I'm like, yeah, okay. So then I hung the phone with her. Then I'm looking around.
Where does Farmer come into all this, Randy?
Well, it's coming up.
All right, let's get to it.
Okay, so I take a couple napkins with his initials on, the Reinsdorf. I go back to the elevator. I push the button. Elevator door open. Same old guy in there. Doesn't say nothing to me. I get on there. As we're going down, we make a stop. And as soon as the door opens, there's Ed Farmer. So it's like, you know, Ed Farmer's looking at me up and down, like, you know, because I look like a hippie. And it's like, I says, how you doing, Ed? He's like, hey, how you doing? And then we went down, and that was it. I got out, and I said, Dad, that's Ed Farmer.
That's more of a, Randy, thank you. That's more of a Jerry Reinsdorf sweet story than an Ed Farmer story, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, all that for Puff and the Farmer.
Right. Yeah. Like, the bulk of the story is pretty, it's kind of interesting because he ends up in Jerry Reinsdorf's suite after a game, which is pretty unlikely, you know. I wouldn't classify that as an Ed Farmer story, though.
I enjoyed it, though. Compelling and rich.
And, you know, Dago T, I mean, come up with a different term for it, please, Randy. You know, I might be allowed to say that, but I don't know if Randy
is. Randy
counts.
Italian?
Well,
how do you know?
He could be, yeah.
He could be a Paisan, Carm.
Maybe he is. Please, let's just call it a tank top from now on. How about, let me see here. Well, we got another Ed Farmer story. Is it going to be a Reinsdorf story or an Ed Farmer story, Merck? What do you think?
It can't be any worse than the last one.
Should I try Leo? All right, Leo's on the south side. Leo, what's up?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good.
This is a full Ed Farmer story, by the way.
All right.
Just in advance. I, like most people, woke up in the morning, like 9 in the morning, about Ed Farmer's passing. And kind of hit me hard because of how we all know his kidney disease and he had a transplant. He was 30 years old. It hit hard to me because my wife right now has lupus. Mm. And she has had it since she's been 10 years old. And I have seen firsthand what lupus has done to my wife. It's very devastating. And I read an article this morning about his passing, that he was a big advocate being a donor. And I myself right now are in the process of being a kidney donor to my wife, Janet, right now. And I would love to meet him one day. Obviously not anymore right now, but if I could have in the past, I would have. But obviously it's hard. I connect with him. And hopefully soon in the future, I can call you guys and say, hey, guys, this was me. And now the transplant's done and everything's great to go.
God bless. Hopefully.
Well, best of luck, kid.
Yeah. I know Ed was a big proponent of that, too. Yeah. And, you know, and again, Ed's health had been declining here in the last year or so. As I understand it, late summer, early fall, Ed was not doing well. You know, they did take him off of the road. White Sox personnel were happy to be able to see him briefly in spring training for a game earlier this year. I know Cap was telling that story too, and I know a lot of people realize now that that was the last time they got a chance to see him because of the delay to the baseball season and everything else. But Ed was out in spring training for a little bit. But yeah, he was not doing well. It is not COVID-19 related. You know, it would have been devastating probably for someone like Ed because of the compromised immune system and some of the things that he had battled throughout the course of his life, but that was not it. He just passed late last night or early this morning. So rest in peace to Ed Farmer, Chicago's very own, who was a fixture on the South Side for about three decades. So we will talk about the front lines of this whole COVID-19 pandemic with an ER, or he's in a, is an emergency medicine doctor, actually, out in California in the Bay Area. We told you the funny story yesterday about Merkin thinking that he had Jason Bateman's cell phone. And yeah, we got Jason Bateman, but this is Dr. Jason C. Bateman. But we still thought he might make an interesting guest. And he said he'd be more than happy to come on and talk to us. So we're going to do that when we come back next.
It's Carmen and Yurko.
Sports talk while you're on the clock.
Do I exaggerate?
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Producer Randy Merkin thought he hit the jackpot earlier this week, and maybe his colleague was just playing like an April Fool's Week prank on him or something. But Merkin said to me early in the week, hey, I think I got a number. I got a lead on Jason Bateman. I said, wow, that would be fabulous. You know, we'd talk to someone like that right now, and Ozark is back for a third season. Incredible. And it turns out that he has the cell phone number of Jason Bateman, all right, but it is not the famous actor. It is the famous Bay Area doctor. We'll call him a famous Bay Area doctor. Dr. Jason C. Bateman, Yurko. That's who Merkin is reaching out to. And again, I'm wondering if he got the number from is not just messing with him. Like, he went online and he searched and he said, here, I'm going to find this guy's phone number and tell him that it's Jason Bateman. So we still figured the good doctor might make a good guest, because here's someone on the front lines through all this, a doctor that can educate us and talk to us, from San Rafael, California, just north of the Bay Area. Dr. Bateman joins us now on ESPN 1000, and we appreciate your time, doctor. Have people reached out to you before thinking you're the actor Jason Bateman?
Yes, that's definitely happened before. I think that the Jason Bateman might be a high roller in Vegas. When I go there, I end up getting amazing reservations until that look of disappointment occurs when I show up to the counter.
You might as well use it to your advantage while you can. What kind of doctor are you, first and foremost?
Emergency room doctor.
Emergency room doctor. So you, you are truly there on the front lines of all this. Can you give us a little update about what things are like where you are, and if you think, are we close to some sort of peak, or is this going to continue to get worse in the coming weeks?
That's a great question. We're more fortunate in this part of the country than other areas, in part due to shelter in place. This is a deadly competitor that we're up against. We're still working out our strategies as to how to outmaneuver it. And I think we're eventually going to beat this. We're in a better place in large part because of the social isolation and stay-at-home efforts that are in place in California.
Was California out in front of this? And so you're saying, as opposed to maybe some other states that rolled that out a little bit later, was the Bay Area seemed to be one of the first to definitely be on this. Is that right?
Yes, and we've very much benefited from this in terms of flattening the curve. People's efforts, for those listeners, staying at home, it makes such a difference. These efforts are helping to protect each other and keep the frontline staff safe. I think of all those unsung heroes in our emergency department are the janitors, the techs. Jose, one of our techs that I work with, he's got family and a young child at home that they have to think about their family as well. So these are the people that keep the place running, and it makes all the difference, all the efforts that everyone's making to try to stay at home and stay healthy.
So your hospitals aren't overwhelmed at this point, right?
Correct. We're still managing. And we're expecting a surge. We have an amazing team that's constantly considering ways to prepare for what's to come.
As the weather warms around the country, as it gets more humid, will that help prevent the spread of this? People keep wondering, is it kind of like the flu? And I know that virus never really dies, but let's face it, it seems to become increasingly rare throughout the summer and into the fall. Will something similar happen with this virus?
Such a great question. I wish that was the case. We can all hope that we'll see some improvement. Right now, we're not expecting it to get that much better. We're still just adding much more preparedness, everyone to stay mindful, everyone to really kind of self-regulate and be cautious and careful.
Dr. Jason C. Bateman is our guest. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Washing hands is the thing I've heard most frequently. It's not touching your face. The problem is, I was telling my partner this earlier. I mean, if you put a videotape on yourself, you know, you took a video of yourself for just 30 minutes, and I bet if you went back and counted how many times you touched your face without even thinking about it, the number would astonish you. So I feel like that's easier said than done. But what are some of those critical tips that, as a doctor, you would tell everybody listening to, other than just staying home, obviously, if you do have to go out, what are some of those preventative measures that are going to most help you avoid coming in contact with the virus?
Going back to stay at home, wash your hands as much as possible, try to stay healthy. I think self-care is going to be important right now. It's, you know, people who like to exercise, as you know, sports and athletic activity, just try to take care of yourself as much as possible. Eating extra healthy, focusing on your sleep. This is all like endurance sports preparation. It's not a sprint. This is more of a marathon. So this is going to be a long haul of washing your hands and being mindful. We talk about PPE and masks out there. That right now should be used for the healthcare workers. They're facing shortages in so many parts of the country, and it's just really important if people have donations or supplies that they're willing to share. We would really benefit from that too.
There did seem to be a little bit of confusion about that, where they said if you weren't sick, it didn't really help you. One way or the other, was that just an effort to keep the masks out of the hands and get them into those other professionals that were on the front lines? And do masks kind of help people if you're not infected? And if I happen to have a mask, me wearing the mask when I'm out doing my essential stuff, my shopping, would that be of benefit to me?
That's a fantastic question. And the guidelines from the CDC might be changing on that. Currently, they're not recommending the vast population to wear masks. They're looking at more data on that. That goes to just, we're all getting so humbled by the new information that's coming out of this to determine if that's going to be helpful.
Will this thing come back just as strong in the fall, in the winter?
Right now, some of the predictions are that that could be the case. Going back to the PPE, I was thinking about Ozark, which is the original reason you guys reached out to me.
Yeah.
We think all the missing PPE, it might be kind of like the cash stuck in the wall in Ozark. Maybe someone will find a huge supply of PPE equipment hidden away somewhere.
Where could it possibly be? I'm telling you, start busting down walls. A few more minutes with Dr. Jason Bateman, because I think it is important stuff. It's good stuff to know. Any idea why, and it's a good thing, believe me, I have two young kids, but why is it that it doesn't affect children at all? And when they say that, are children still, can they get it and contribute in the spread? I mean, I'm assuming they can, but there seems to be virtually no effect on kids under the age of about 14. Is that right?
Kids can get sick. There's a recent report of a newborn who died of the disease. Children in general are just so super resilient compared to us. Us old timers, we're much more at risk of this, of getting sick. And those kids can then spread it to the people that are more at risk. So these precautions are universal.
Yeah, but kids get the flu. You know, like we hear about this herd immunity that we've built up over the years because the flu virus has been around so long, and kids get the flu, but this doesn't seem to be affecting them the same way. It's so confusing. Will we eventually build up an immunity to this, a natural immunity, a herd immunity, I guess is what the medical profession calls it?
That's been discussed as a strategy. I think it was in England. There was some discussion about that. If that was to happen, it's at what cost? Vaccine can be developed up until that time, then that's definitely the best course.
I see what you're saying. That's the thing that's going to protect us most. So can you envision, Doctor, people actually being in stands for games anytime soon? I mean, we're hopeful games return, even if it means no fans in the stands, because I think that could be important for a lot of people. But do you envision anytime soon where fans can be able to, and I'm talking about tens of thousands of fans congregating in the same place, will that happen again in 2020?
Good question. The teams, I know, are struggling. We want to get people out there to try to enjoy themselves and to appreciate getting back into sports. And one consideration was if people might have immunization passports at some point, if people are exposed to it or develop antibodies, can they actually exhibit some sort of a document saying I'm safe and I can manage this? Perhaps once they get a vaccine out there, that would be one route for that.
All right, doctor, we appreciate it. And keep up the good work and the fight out there. All right.
Thank you both. Appreciate it. And just a reminder to everyone at home, stay healthy. Wash your hands.
There you go. The three most important things right now. Dr. Jason C. Bateman, not the famous actor. He is an emergency room doctor in California, where he says shelter in place has definitely worked.
And what city was he from? I forgot.
San Rafael, I believe. Yes.
Lovely San Rafael,
which is just north of San Francisco, going north on that Golden Gate Bridge.
Heading up toward Napa, kid.
Heading up towards Napa. That is correct, Yurko.
Lovely.
Such a beautiful part of the country. It's gorgeous.
I got out just before they started shutting down the state, kid.
Yes, you did. Boy, did you.
I got out on the 16th.
You guys had that trip planned.
Well, it wasn't planned perfectly because we would have, obviously chosen to enjoy ourselves.
Well, no, I know, but one week later.
The transition was happening. We were wondering if we were going to get home. I mean, right. I actually said, boy, I'd love to be quarantined at Pebble Beach. Not a bad little thing.
1 week later, you might not have been able to go on that trip. Who knows? It's crazy, right?
Absolutely crazy. It probably would have been canceled on us. I fortunately bought the insurance.
Okay.
Just in case, and I only would have been, it was $1,025 ahead on it. So, I would have gotten probably 80% of that back, so I'd have been fine because that was the down payment on it, $1,025. Mm-hmm. But we went out there. I've done a wellness check on all our guys.
Yeah.
All our guys here now, how many days it's been already? 16th, it's 15 days. It's 15, 17 days now. Nobody has got anything.
Yeah, right.
We're talking about guys in Ely, Minnesota now. We're talking about guys downstate in Illinois, some guys on the west side of Chicago. So we've got everybody healthy and accounted for.
Good.
22 bodies ranging from all ages,
okay,
as old as like 74 to about 32.
Okay.
So there's a nice range of individuals that went on the trip. Everybody healthy. We're good.
Good. That is good to hear. All right. When we come back, we will sneak in a few more calls, and we're going to play Jeff Passan with Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. When MLB will be able to return, the answer might not invoke much confidence in everybody. We're going to play that coming up next.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is the home of Carmen and Yurko.
Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Remember, ESPN Chicago and the Illinois broadcasters are uniting against hunger. 8 food banks in Illinois are responding to the critical need for food caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Your gift will be processed by the Greater Chicago Food Depository and the Northern Illinois Food Bank. You can donate without leaving your home. The new goal is $1 million. Conagra Brands Foundation is now matching every dollar donated up to $100,000. That is fabulous. Go to feedingillinois.org/unite or text FEEDIL to 91999, and your gift will help make sure that families in our communities have enough to eat. Use the hashtag FeedIL for your social posts. This was Jeff Passan yesterday with Waddle and Sylvie talking about the MLB season and when it might return.
I would do this right now. I would sign up for this plan today without chancing it if I could. But Waddle said he'd be more optimistic. If you could get me a regular season in August, September, and October with a playoff system in a venue or some venues in November, that I would happily sign up as a fan for that. Would you, or are you more optimistic than that?
Are you signing up as a fan thinking that these games are going to be played in major league stadiums?
Not sure.
Okay. I think that's realistic then, yes. I think that is, I'm not going to say that's the likeliest outcome, but I think that is a satisfactory outcome right there. Because if you have 3 months, we're talking 12 plus weeks, more like 13 or so. We're talking, 7 games a week with doubleheaders. We're looking at somewhere between 80 and 100 games at that point. I think you could make a reasonable season out of what would amount to a half year to a little more than that. I think the midterm view that I was talking about was you start the game, you know, you start the season after the All-Star game. Like the All-Star game where you bring the biggest names in the sport and the best players for the last 5 years and the people who are going to be the most intriguing. And let's say you have all kinds of voting going on online, you know, for the statistical studs, the Mike Trouts of the world, who obviously need to be there. And then you have young players who do fans want to see. And you load the teams with players like that, and you just sell it as this celebration of baseball coming back in Los Angeles. Like, it's pretty good. Like, it sounds pretty exciting. And there might not be people in the stadium to do this, but at the same time, I think there would be a lot of people tuning in. And the optimistic view is sometime between mid-May and early June, you come back. And as much as I would love for that to be the case, as days go by, it seems increasingly difficult, but doesn't seem impossible. There's just a ton of planning that needs to go into effect in order to make that a possibility and make that realistic. And it's something that I don't know if a sport, even one that at the top tends to be pretty well organized and well run in Major League Baseball, can pull off.
So that was Jeff Passan yesterday. I kind of like the idea of starting with the All-Star game. It's kind of, I think it's different. It's unique. It might be a good way to get everybody still somewhat interested in the months leading up to it, Yerk, in a sense. Like you said, you could do a vote with, you know, forget about whatever the stats would look like this year. We know who the game's best players are, right? I mean, we
Mike
know
Trout, Carm.
Yeah, I mean, Mookie Betts,
yeah,
Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, Chris Bryant, Yoán Moncada, I'll say it, Nolan Arenado. I mean, we know who the best players are.
Who's your top catcher in the National League, Carm?
In the National League, it's probably Real Muto, don't you think? Posey's getting a little bit older.
Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Yeah.
Real. What's his name? Real Muto?
JT Real Muto. Real Muto.
I get it. Real Muto's his last name.
Yes. What did you think? It was his first name?
I thought it was Raul Muto.
Sylvie's laughing in here. No, not Raul Muto.
Not Raul Muto.
JT Real Muto. Yeah.
Okay.
He's probably your best. He's probably right. Am I missing somebody, boys? He's probably the best catcher in the National League. You know who's one of the best in the American League?
Sure I do. Pudge.
He plays on the South Side. His initials are YG.
Yeah, that's Grimaldi. Grasmani.
Close. Yasmani Grandal.
Yameldez Grisdani.
Yeah, it's close enough. Not so bad.
Who do you have, Carm?
I mean,
what was his name?
Yasmani Grandal.
Yasmani Grandal. Of course it is. Yeah. Yes. White Sox. Big acquisition in the offseason.
Raul. Yes. Yurko thought he was Raul Moto.
You got to have some fun, Carm.
You do.
I've got greater concerns.
Speaking of the South Side, PK wins our bracket challenge. Paul Konerko, the slam in game two, the greatest moment as voted by the fans of the 05 White Sox run. Yurko's got his bracket all ready. We're going to debut that on Monday. Right. The Cubs moments from 2016. Right.
You'll receive that at about 5 p.m. today.
I love it. Oh, so I get to actually see the bracket. Okay.
Well, I was mandated by Randy Merkin.
No, I don't think
that. He doesn't trust me at all. It was mandated by Randy Merkin that I send it to him.
Okay.
I still received it, but
he said by 5 o'clock tonight.
Oh, okay. What are you, Deef? Are you Deef? Do you have an issue with hearing? I said I was going to send it by 5 p.m. today.
I'm very much looking forward to that.
Jeez.
Should we say hi to Vito in Hinsdale real quick?
Start till next week. I'd love to say hello to Vito.
He wanted to share a Norm Van Leer story. The great storm in Norman would have been 73 yesterday. What's up, Vito?
Hey, how's it going, Carm?
Good. Good, good.
How are you, Vito?
Fine. I'm good. Hanging in there, working. So, my wife cuts hair at a salon in Western Springs.
Right by me.
And, yeah, one of her clients his name is Ron Contorno. He owns Full House Solutions. They're a marketing group for tickets to help arenas, tournaments, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so he was launching. He had a big success story. He was going to have a party. He's got he has a loft over on State Street. You can see Soldier Field. So my wife says Ron invited us to his party. So she said we got to be there a certain time. I said okay. So we get down there, no place to park. So my wife tells me, you're going to have to park a couple blocks away. She says, why don't you just drive me off in front, park the car. This is the address. This is the building right here. So I park the car, sure enough, about 2.5 blocks away. I come upstairs. Ron is there. Hey, Vito, how you doing? How's it going? I says, where's Anna? He goes, she's over there sitting on the couch. She's got somebody talking with her.
Norm.
So I walk over there, and she's got a big smile on her face. She's sipping a cocktail. And she says, V. She says, Mr. Norm Van Leer. And I said, I know who he is. I said, hey, Mr. Van Leer. He goes, Mr. Van Leer, Norm. He says, oh, by the way, don't worry about it, brother. I'm just keeping her warm for you.
Yeah, he might have been saying that when you walked in, but trust me.
Smooth operator.
Vito, thanks, buddy. And Norm had different plans.
It took you 2 hours to find parking.
Next to your wife.
Oh, yeah. He was hoping it took you 2 hours to park.
I love it, Vito. Thanks. We're going to crosstalk coming up next with Waddle and Sylvie. We're back in 2 minutes.